I read it in the New York Times. There's a massive polycule in Boston.
That is so weird to me just because it's Boston. That was the only thing that surprised me.
Sonoma, Alex is nodding, maybe.
Yeah, I don't think the editor would have been like, bring me something new if it was West Coast.
I think that makes it more interesting.
That it's in Boston?
Sure, Boston.
Yeah, it's mainstreaming.
I wonder how they pronounce polycule there.
I don't even think there's a name for it in Miami. It's just accepted.
Yeah.
Polycule is just, they're like, what? What are you talking about, bro?
It's just friends. Just friends hanging out.
Welcome to People vs. Algorithms, a show about patterns in media, technology, and culture. I'm Brian Morrissey, and each week I'm joined by Troy Young and Alex Schleifer. I'm recording this after 3 days spent at the Possible Conference, which is a sprawling and somewhat newish marketing conference in Miami Beach. Check that. Possible presents as a marketing conference, but walking around the many branded cabanas and running into so many people, I recall that, like most marketing conferences, this is really a marketing and advertising technology conference. The brands are the lure, but the real purpose is creating a marketplace to connect buyers and sellers around technology. Something of a metaphor for modern media, I think. Even if Alex laments how the internet will become nothing more than a giant QVC as AI further entrenches itself. I try to be practical about these things. An industry conference reminds me yet again that we are all in sales. And that's what keeps this economy and society humming. The carnival of capitalism just rolls on and AI will be no different. But what AI will become is an open question, because I think it's the ultimate fusion of technology and capitalism. And the question is, what do we want AI and robots to do, and what do we not want them to do? And we discussed this in this episode. And my conclusion is that we tend to not want AI in aspects of our lives where we value taste and human connection. It's not lost on me that the companies paying for this conference are technology providers who at their base are offering tools to more effectively and efficiently do what humans once did. And yet, talk to any of these tech companies about their marketing spending. And I did just that over the last 3 days, so hopefully very successfully. And you'll find that they value face-to-face interaction over all other ways of selling. And the media industry is somewhat unique for its events fetish. But this is one that I classify under the Bezos dictum to focus on things that don't change. And I don't think that's going to change. We get into all of this during this conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Please leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to this podcast and send in your feedback. We always enjoy it and share it in our text thread that we use to plan this podcast. My email is bmorrissey@therebooting.com.
Can you start by giving us a little debrief, like the good, bad, and ugly of this conference you've been hanging around at?
The event is called Possible. It's in Miami. And the whole idea of it is basically to Americanize Cannes, because I think the Americans are like, Cannes, it's too big, it's too expensive, it's too French, let's be real. And going to France is always great in the summer. But companies, I think it's like it has an opening to steal some of Cannes' thunder, because going all the way to the Riviera to meet, for American companies to meet with other American companies, never made sense. So basically they started this quote unquote marketing conference in Miami last year. This year, I think it's like 3,000 people. Now, of course, any marketing conference is, the marketers are like a very small sliver of the audience. It's all the quote unquote ecosystem providers, AKA the people who want to sell to the marketers. So it creates a very strange dynamic, but it's at the Fontainebleau. Have you guys ever been to the Fontainebleau?
Unfortunately.
People in Miami call it the Fontainebleau, which I think is hilarious. I was talking to you guys as like non-Miami people, so I adapt. But in Miami, everyone calls out each other bro.
How is AI affecting the ad tech world?
So, you know, these events are just entire sales orgies, like at the end of the, not literal, but like.
You never know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, it is the Fontainebleau, so it is possible. I ran into this ad tech investor. He also podcasts, and he was like, the next wave of ad tech is coming, and it's all this AI, and they're just going to build the companies differently. And, you know, there's all these conversation, whatever the panels on AI. But one of the things, this agency guy was showing me this Waldo.fyi, and it's, I shared this. Did you guys go over it at all?
A little bit. So I was a little flustered running in here. My son's watching Netflix on the floor of my office.
Shouldn't he be at school?
He's sick.
Don't kids go to school anymore? I read something that kids don't go to school anymore.
No. He goes to school every day. He's got like a nasty, raspy cough, and he hasn't been sleeping well.
He's instructed by the leaders of the polycule.
Is that?
Yeah.
This is inevitable. I think when de Blasio started dating while married, and his wife started dating too.
That's a Park Slope thing. That's a Park Slope phenomenon.
Wait, I didn't know that was happening.
It's a short walk to a polycule, I think.
From where?
From dating while married to, you know, I forget what they had some phrase for you
I
share a partner.
I wouldn't underestimate how hard it is to manage multiple kind of deeper relationships at once. I think a big part of a polycule is very much logistics and meetings and scheduling.
Said by a person that seems to know the challenges.
That's tough for you because you don't like product managers because you would need one.
If Alex isn't in a polycule, he's definitely adjacent because you would do all that.
California. Yeah. I mean, but think about it, right? Like you need to manage like different people's schedules and energies and what they like to do. Like, I mean, it's not as easy. Like two people, a relationship with two people is hard enough. Three, four, five, that's crazy.
This is a perfect segue to AI.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about what AI is going to change and what it's not going to change. Because one of the things that came out of this, to me, I've just been at that possible thing for a couple of days, is AI will definitely change advertising. And because there's a lot of amazing advertising. I want your input. You both have worked in advertising or advertising adjacent agencies, right?
Kind of. I mean, I ran one.
And yeah, then so there you go.
That got acquired by what was a publishing / ad network / media company. So yeah, the first 20 years of my careers were soiled by advertising.
it's a dirty business. But anyway, this Waldo.fyi, it just does all the brand briefs. It does all the brand research. It can create the pitch deck. I haven't used it too many times for them. There's so much work that goes into just the pitching process that is going to be done by AI without a doubt. So I can see how advertising holding companies are salivating about this, but it would seem to me that we already see a lot of marketing copy has clearly been written by AI in some areas. But what is your take on the impact it'll have for advertising specifically?
The creative component of it is going to be really massively upended because, you know, rather than testing out, you know, 20 different variants and charging for the creative for those, you'll have AIs just generating hundreds of thousands of variants. It came out that TikTok is even starting to pitch AI influencers for brands because it's much easier to just, you know, have your AI influencer kind of communicate your message than deal with people and all that stuff. So I think both on the planning, but also on the creative and then also on the targeting, it's all going to be, there's going to be massive shifts. And my worry is that it only reinforces the power of the incumbents, right? Like the people who have all the compute and all the data and all the stuff like that. So it's going to be more Amazon, Google, Facebook kind of not only serving the ad, but generating the ad and potentially doing the strategy. You can just tell it, hey, I need an ad that sells this shit and it spits something out. You know, why wouldn't I go there? Am I simplifying this, Troy, too much? Am I being naive?
No, I think you're right. I mean, I can't think of any way. You know, there was a demo. I don't know if you guys sent it around, but there was a demo at Google Cloud's event 2 weeks ago that showed something similar to Waldo or whatever it is, FYI, where you basically upload, you know, merchandising imagery, all of your brand materials, you know, really all the sort of ingredients of marketing campaigns. And it does most of the work, like a lot of the middle work that was the sort of busy work that keeps advertising agencies, you know, billing. And then you think about the things that Alex mentioned, which are like media optimization, media planning, targeting, creative optimization. All of that feels like it's pretty optimizable or, you know, supportable by smart systems. And then there's the stuff that's not, and it's what gives products meaning, which is the top layer of storytelling. And that will fuel, you know, a type of content creation that will persist and be done by really high-end talented storytellers. But even that will be rationalized to some extent because the creative process of making things is going to be massively AI assisted. Mm. So I think it's going to change the industry a whole lot. And I think that it's going to do something that people have talked about for a long time, which is put more focus on the product, right? Which is if the product's good, you know, you still need to market it and you still need to kind of frame it and contextualize it and tell stories about it and all that. But you know, the product does a lot of the talking. Which was, it does remind me of the, I mean, we can keep talking about this, but it just, well, I'll put a pin in it, the auspicious reviews or launch of the AI pin this week, which was really quite something.
Yeah.
Like Marcus,
I mean, they can hire Droga5, but that's not going to do it for that thing.
And as soon as it got into the hands of the people, people realized this is deeply flawed.
You can't muscle your way through with marketing anymore. But, you know, this is like sort of one of those lags, right?
This product is exceptionally bad and marketing for it was exceptionally misleading. I think some products you could shove through, you know, if you spend the money on. I think this one is the cat's out of the bag. But yeah. Sorry, Brian.
Well, let's talk about it. Can you do that? Give me an example that you can just muscle it through with like a lot of ad spend. Leave aside like if you control distribution, you can do it.
I mean, I think that is the problem right now where the internet, including, you know, a lot of the people listening to this podcast are quite excited about turning the internet into QVC, I think. You know, Troy talks about commerce and we keep talking about commerce saving content. Excuse me? Well, I mean, I think
Why would you say that?
Hear me out. There is a potentially appealing
an
concept
audience strategy to go of building.
But here's the let me kind of reframe this. It's appealing to think that, you know, a lot of the future of the way content creators are going to generate revenue is through commerce, right? We talk about commerce as a broad thing. But what technology and platforms have allowed is to turn everything into basically QVC. Like if you look at the amount of shilling that's going on right now on TikTok constantly, either via the TikTok stores or whether within the influencers. And since you have like this kind of giant logistics networks and fabrication networks that allow you to create all sorts of junk really quickly, the space has been flooded with junky products. You know, step onto Instagram. I keep getting some new cable management system or pair of pants or a thing like that. And you buy those products and
there's some nice pants.
But a lot of them, I mean, Temu and stuff like that is like lowest common denominator stuff that is just, you know, that you're getting just blasted in front of you. And then you buy this thing that ends up in a landfill, you know, 3 weeks later. I think we're being pushed a lot of junk right now because advertising has become so efficient.
You need to get into a new segment, my friend.
Are you going to be in like wrong. Adbusters now? This is like...
Well, no, isn't that true? Don't you think?
It's not the band I hate. It's their fans.
But isn't that true?
Are you talking about Phish?
I'm sure. Well, I just want to say like to whoever's listening to us right now, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the other guy.
Yeah, the other guy.
The other guy.
That's what, you know, actually, to bring it back to advertising, David Kenny, I was doing a call with him after they sold Digitas to Publicis, and it was him and Maurice Levy. And I was like, David, just first question. I was like, you've told me for 5 years the advertising holding companies were dinosaurs. Why in the world would you sell to one? And he's like, oh, I was talking about the other ones.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So if you were to start an advertising agency today, okay, and you're looking at this stuff coming down the pike, because I think we've talked a lot about there's no moats, there's no safe places, but like, what do you, I mean, it's not like fields are going to disappear or something. If you were going to start an advertising agency today, what would it be like? What would it be? Like, I would assume it would be just a few super creative people who can do amazing creative work, right, around building on the product? Because I keep going back to, I just think there's a delay. If you think about the early organic days, I remember talking with Bob Greenberg all the time, and he was like, advertising is just going to be, you know, product demonstrations. And in some ways, he's kind of right. You know, it was just, it took a long time.
Right. It's like the thing that you sent around, Alex, that variation on the kind of personal recorder that goes with that software. What's the name of that?
It's called limitless.ai, and it's called the Limitless Pendant. $99.
$99, no subscription. They built the software first. You can clip it on, you know, on your clothing or put it on your keyring or whatever. And it's like a little single kind of purpose utility to help you remember things and record things and transcribe them and all of that. And it feels like it's quite useful. It didn't need a lot of storytelling. The founder is like a nerdy tech guy, and he made a long video about why he made it and what it does and all that. And that was enough for me.
Yeah. The future of advertising is Loom.
Right. But I mean, okay, if I was going to build an advertising agency today, it would be just, you know, a few creatives that understand where to pull out, where to create things of value in a world where so many things are devalued. If somebody comes to you with a product that is brand new in a brand new space that is competitively priced and well put together, then maybe you don't have to do so much work. But if it's a white t-shirt, or if it's just some sort of apparel that has a lot of competition, you need work to put kind of objects into the culture and get people to buy them. There's a lot of different types of products.
You totally do. Imagine that you were a seller of a thing. Say you were, you know, you made a new knife brand or something, and you wanted, or any product like that, you wanted to achieve some kind of Veblen status, i.e. it was a premium item, an item that's price was part of its value proposition, or some type of perceived premium. You know, there's a lot of work to do that just robots can't do, to think about what the strategy is to do that. Why does your product exist? What's the story? Who needs to have it? You know, how do you kind of like ease it into culture? Where do people find it? How do they discover? I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that's really strategic if you want to create something that is coveted beyond its, you know, utility value.
Right. It's actually why I think you see a lot of these pants brands just go with utility, right? Because when I say everything's being turned into QVC, everything is like turning into, do you ever do this and somebody spills coffee on their pants or tries to put a wallet that's too big in their back, and then they show you how the product solves the problem. But there's a bunch of products that do not fit within that kind of
format. And I think they're going to tack away from the digital advertising because it's going to be optimized into oblivion. Like the best, I think like out of home is going to be interesting. I was talking to some out of home people at this event, so maybe I got swayed by it. But I think actually having a presence in the physical, in the meat space, if you will, is going to be more valuable than ever. I mean, spending money on a flagship store in the design district is a great investment. I mean, it gives you heft in the real world. When you're on Instagram, it's just a feed of pants, of lighters, of all kinds of different things.
Yeah, and the feeds are going to be completely swamped with that stuff, right? And it's going to be indiscernible. You know, like right now you have these fake podcasters advertising products. Have you seen that? They look like it's meant to look like it's a guest on Joe Rogan. And they'll talk about something, but all these guys are actors and they're just recording 30 of these a day or whatever.
Thought about making LinkedIn ads like that.
I think you should.
That was the first thing I thought.
I mean, I think we should spend, you know, at least half an hour of what we're doing just shilling some supplements. But once you do that, like once everything's, you know, kind of swarmed with all these ads, yeah, absolutely. Put a billboard out on the 101, you know, or buy a store. That seems to be a way to stand out.
Do you see Airmail has a newsstand? It's the first newsletter to newsstand.
I never thought Airmail would get this far, but the content's really good and the packaging is good. And
I'd love to see the financials.
How do we get there, guys?
Okay, sorry about that. By the way,
we're not selling enough here. We're not, you know.
I don't have any webinars coming up.
All right. Hey, Alex, do you think that this is a death blow for Humane?
Yes.
Do you think that, over?
Yeah.
It's not a death blow, it was DOA. That's not if you make a shitty product, people are going to find out. You can't just muscle your way through it.
One of their employees said on X, the head of new media said that attempting to put a brave face on the reviews cycle, he said, feedback is a gift.
Right.
But like trying to blame the negativity of social media or quote unquote hit pieces and all this stuff, it's like, it's
I don't think they're doing that. I think they actually didn't do that, because I know the type of person that feels like that mentions that they shared an elevator ride with Steve Jobs, so now they're like gifted with the wisdom of the ancients, right? And I think a lot of people that come out of Apple feel like that they're leaving Apple with some incredible assets, which they are, you know, like working at Apple is no small feat. But the problem is they lose the aura of Apple, they lose the infrastructure of Apple, they lose the decades of product development of Apple, and they come out thinking that they're going to release something and fall in love with their ideas. The thesis was wrong here. The product was badly executed. It works worse than I expected, and it feels like it there's just nowhere to go. You know, they can't say,
so you're
well,
saying
you know,
there's a chance, basically.
Yeah, exactly. This doesn't feel like a V1 of something special. This feels like, yeah, this should be a $69 clip that connects to your phone if people want that form factor.
Yeah.
And I think the leadership has lost a lot of the aura that they started with. And I think that company is a joke now. So I have no strong opinions, but... And look, I like people trying new things out, taking swings, but they released a product that they knew was going to be reviewed like this because they knew it wasn't delivering what they said it would. And they tried.
You call them pinheads?
Man, yeah. I don't know. I think it's kind of incredible to like charge $700 for something.
Do you
like
think
that.
They knew that? Because I always wonder that with like epically bad movies, if the people making it are like, oh my God, this thing sucks. Like,
everybody knows.
I thought it was going to be better. I would assume they know it sucks.
Everybody knows. Even the thing that happens with movies or with any product more often than not is that people think it's going to be bad, but it turns out to be a success. You know, Lucas with Star Wars. I think the reverse is rare to happen when a movie, everybody feels that thing's a hit and then it flops. That's much more rare. In product, when the thing doesn't work... Like they knew it didn't work. They knew it took 10 seconds to
That's
answer.
A problem,
they knew it
right?
overheated. They knew it was so heavy that it pulled your shirt down. That's why everybody's wearing thick jackets. That's why they learned how to demo it by continuing to talk after having put the query in. You know, the projector on your hand. I mean, my hands aren't that wrinkly, but I'm pretty sure I can't read anything on them, you know? Like it was just, it came from a thesis of like screens are bad. So what can we do to not use a screen? And answer is that screens are actually super useful sometimes, especially when you need to look at a map or review the photo you're going to take. Like that's the truth. Having a little screen in your pocket is awesome, right? The fact that we're addicted to it is like saying, well, you know what? Like lighters help you smoke, so we should get rid of the lighter. Like it's a software problem, the addiction part of it. It's not like removing the screen. Anyway,
put yourself in their position. What do they do then? Should they have just like shut it down and been like, here's the rest of the money back, investors?
I think it was hubris.
The product's
I think
good.
If you look at the presentation when they announced it, they thought that most of the things would be fixed by then and they needed to announce something. They announced something as if it was, you know, the new iPhone. And leadership in the company thought that they could solve all the problems. I have a sense that they slapped on the AI thing because that thing had been in development prior to kind of GPTs becoming mass market. So I think they had a good idea and they had a bunch of people, you know, powerful people around them that told them they would change the world and they started believing it. And
like, I wonder that about Quibi. What did they know and when did they know it? Because it seemed like when Quibi came out, it was obviously DOA. It didn't take, you didn't have to be Nostradamus to see that this thing's not going to work. And I would hear like, guy we had it was covering it was trying to make a good case for it to me. I was like,
I had a production deal with him, so I was optimistic.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
You personally?
No, Hearst.
Oh, what did you guys make? Did you make that one, the guy with the golden arm one?
No, we made several, actually. It was a lot of money.
Was it good money?
Well, I mean, it was promising, yeah.
Yeah. So you believed in it, or you just believed in the check?
I believe that we needed to make content for lots of distribution points.
Okay.
The latter. Did they pay you?
Yeah. He said the money was great. He's got that grin that says that the money was really good.
Well, I think that was the problem. Quibi is not a bad idea, I think. But at its core, it's something that could have
been validated. It's been validated.
TikTok validated it. It's just that, you know, the trick was to get people to create free content for you. You know,
this is a problem. Tech people, this is the first principles. Is this first principles thinking? Like, first principles, don't pay for content. Get other people to do it for free.
I mean, first principle, and if they don't do just it, like,
take
don't
it.
Do,
just
don't,
take it.
Yeah, first principle just means don't assume that the way it was done before is the right way to do it and start over. But yeah, sure.
For the sake of the audience, let's step it up a bit and move on. Brian, you got other news items for us today?
I think
before we get into the main course.
Well, I was intrigued by, I want to keep with this AI theme, because I saw one of these videos about an AI robotic massage therapist that was coming out, and it was being demoed by the founder. And I was like, oh my God, I know that guy. And his name is Eric Littman. And he used to run a mobile ad analytics company. And now he's doing robot massage therapists. And I think this is actually, I think this is a good use for robotics. I don't know how AI is involved.
I mean, it's fine, right? Like, we've all sat in a massage chair, Brian. I have massage in my car, right? Like, it does that, but it's not very good. Thing is, I got a massage yesterday, actually. I hadn't
humble brag.
That's not, wait, really?
Getting a massage is not.
No, even, but having a massage.
Even I, as a man.
Having
of the
a massage in your car.
Well, getting a massage on a Monday is a humble brag.
Yeah, true.
Well,
I was out there working at a.
Troy is a walking, talking pool. Humble brag.
Well, it made me think that there's just some things that we should agree that AI shouldn't do. There's just some things that we don't want AI to do, or robots. I mean, it's fine if you want a cheap massage by a robot, but I would rather have a massage by a masseuse, I think.
But doesn't everything...
I mean, I don't think...
I mean, honestly, I'd rather have my art painted by a human too. I mean, I think it's just a cost thing, right? If you have a little...
And convenience. I use a massage gun. Is it as good on my Achilles as like a professional sports massage therapist who treats runners? No, but...
Well, that's a little different, right? That's therapeutic use of a sports gun on your whatever. But like,
what kind of massages are we talking about?
Yeah, I mean,
like a real massage.
All right, but Troy, where does it start breaking it into?
There's certain things in society you don't do.
Okay,
let's put a list together.
He wants to run through a list. Okay.
I don't want to run through a list. I thought maybe you all guys right. would bring things to say. Well, Absolutely not. Here's the thing that we've never seen a technology like AI that purports to do so many things, that touch so many industries, where suddenly we're questioning our value as living, breathing creatures on the planet.
I'm going to throw one out. I mean, I started thinking about it, I started thinking about ones that you might choose.
So what do we not want it to do?
Valet, sommelier, you know, these types of things. But
I'd be fine.
I don't want a robot waiter. I don't care what they do. I want a real human being. At a restaurant. In fact, I was having sushi the other day and a robot came to get my tray or whatever, my plate. And it was assisted by a human, but like the robot came over and I was like, get this thing away from me.
But that's interesting. It was assisted by the human. And I think that's the sort of really dystopian thing. I mean, I can see like a robot assistant, but ultimately,
I think the robot. The other way around, right? But I think the
robot. Well, no, but I think that's where it's going. Right. I mean, you see this already in the self-checkout like ridiculousness where you got one human now. Everyone else is doing the work. I guess it'll be robots then. And the human just steps in when they have to.
But I don't want to talk to a robot therapist. I don't want to have sex with a robot.
I think therapy is probably where I draw a line.
Oh boy.
You don't want to have sex with a robot. Wait, you don't want to have sex with your robot therapist? You know, that they could lose their license.
That is true.
I don't want a robot to cut my hair. I mean, I don't have much hair.
I know you have, I agree with you. However, I think sex and advertising are the first thing to fundamentally, completely change because of AI and robots. It's unstoppable.
In what order?
This is my list, though.
It's the same as the internet, like together. Sex and advertising always go together. Because you know what?
Finally, we got an episode.
It's name. Content that's created that people are too ashamed to talk about, so it never gets criticized. So, you know, porn and advertising. So that's where we try all the wacky technologies on.
Well, that is true. A lot of internet technologies, media technologies were really sort of came out of porn, right?
I mean, yeah. I don't want a family dinner where there's a beautiful, you know, stew cooking on the stove, where it's being lovingly prepared by people I want to hang out with. And I don't want a robot replacing that. I don't want AI doing that for me.
Well, that's because it's human connection. It's not like you're not looking to get a meal. If it's just like a transactional thing, and that's, there's a lot of middle stuff in life. And I feel like with the AI discussion, everyone goes to the things with the most meaning. No, it's not going to replace Nick Cage songs or whatever. Like I mean, it's going to replace all the
Nice reference, Brian. Nice reference. I thought you were going to say Dire Straits or something.
Dire Straits? Nick Cage came out against AI, and he's like,
Nicolas Cage. I thought you said Nick Cave.
Nick Cave, that's what I meant. Nick Cave came out against AI. He was like, it's never suffered.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. I think that, you know, that's all well and good until you start talking about the hundreds of thousands of people who cannot afford assisted living and would truly benefit from a robot cooking their meals or giving them massages or helping them clean the toilet.
My wife and I didn't have children, so like I'm betting on the robots caring
right.
for
so,
us.
Right, so yeah, exactly. After completing,
I got a robot in this fight.
Yeah, you're gonna be the first on your Vision Pro, like strapping your Vision Pro while your robot masseuse gives you a
hey, listen,
massage.
Guys, I can go through my list of things I want the robot to do.
Okay, that's better.
All right, I knew you had a list.
No, but I was thinking and you know doing what I always suggest you guys do, which is prepare for the episode 5 minutes before I put a list.
Do
together.
I sound unprepared? But,
no, you sound prepared. Brian doesn't sound prepared.
I'm prepared. What are you talking about?
But like, I don't want to go for a walk with AI.
Again, it's human connection.
I don't want it to design my house. I don't.
I'm fine with that. That's not human connection. That's taste. It's human connection.
You
and
live
taste.
In Miami, so you know. It's just a white box with a palm tree.
What do you not want the AI to do for you, Brian?
Anything to deal with human connection, right? So, I don't care about reading marketing messaging that's from AI. Okay. I don't want to read a novel that was written by AI because
do you want AI to be your coach, your life coach?
Like life coach? I don't know. I mean, I've asked like the AI, like Perplexity and Claude 3 stuff that's beyond just like factual information. I don't find it very good, at least right now.
I love turning on the ChatGPT kind of voice conversation mode. I was doing it while I was cooking. I was making corn tortillas. And at first I was just asking it to help me with some measurements. For some reason, it asked me like if I was adding stuff to it. And I said, oh, I'm thinking about doing that. And then the AI said like, well, you know, if you did that, you could do that. And then I ended up having a conversation with it. And I found out it was very engaging. And I thought this is absolutely something that's going to happen. You know, I had
Your son was rolling around coughing on the floor.
Yeah. No, I was alone in that moment. And I felt like really, it wasn't like.
You can call me Alex anytime.
It felt like a lot of people are lonely, right? And I think if it helps, it helps. Where AI worries me more is in the mass production of stuff that is just heavily targeted to elicit a behavior from us. So either like mass-produced content, mass-targeted content, advertising, even down to like Temu generating like custom products that get 3D printed somewhere in China, you know, and shipped across the world because you just, you know, Googled red shoe at one point in your life. Like that type of stuff worries me more where AI becomes so great at turning the world. Because I believe now that the, you know, the end state of capitalism and technology is to turn everything into QVC. Like everything will be like, oh, you wanted this? Here's the thing, right? And you can do that with content and soon with hard goods and with real goods and stuff like that. And I think that is what worries me.
Do you believe that, Alex? Because if that was the case, then there would be a massive hole for the opposite because people wouldn't want that. You wouldn't want that. And I would market something bespoke, handmade to you.
Yeah.
I don't want anything.
This is not coming for Brunello. I mean, it's like what you're talking about.
But
is
then we're talking as like the one percenters who say like, well, you know, you'll always enjoy this. But the fact of the matter is like the vast majority of people will have very little money.
I didn't say this was going to be a democratic thing. I mean, when you look outside in society, I mean, give me a break. This is going to widen the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And like,
it's going to become
The have-nots are going to have more.
Yeah, they're going to have more crap.
But they're going to have more crap.
They're going to have massages, and they're going to have a prepared meal.
You asked about what we didn't want AI to make. What I don't want AI to become is the perfect way to extract more out of the vast majority of people that are poor in this world. I think that's what it's going to become. Or
to emancipate them.
Yeah. You're against the sommelier becoming AI.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying that's what I don't want to happen. We could kind of have a renaissance where we feel like, you know, like when everything is devalued, we look for things of value, and the things of value are things that it is the spoon that was carved by somebody, or it is like time together, or it is a real song. Yeah, sure. I hope so. However, algorithms plus AI plus, you know, massively optimized fabrication and logistics is a great way of like turning the majority of the population into like macro consumers that keep buying shit. That's why Temu is so big. It was why these sites are exploding. Yeah, I really worry about it.
It's inevitable, isn't it? I mean, it's inevitable. This is technology plus capitalism. I mean, that's...
But it's game over for us, for culture, for the planet, right?
Huh.
We can all listen to our like...
Shouldn't the marketplace like replace... I don't know. The marketplace always springs up.
I don't think it's game over at all. What if it gives us much more time to be with one another? What if it gives us much more time to...
We're talking about different paths here, Troy. If it does, yes, great. If it doesn't, then not great. I'm not saying it will happen.
But no, what you're saying is actually, in some ways, to me, very sort of pessimistic about the nature of people. Right? Like that we're just going to allow capitalism to feed us Temu endlessly because we are just these kind of slaves to, you know, these kind of endorphins that are produced by these big kind of algorithmically driven machines. And we're just going to like keep ordering on our phone.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at like our behaviors in general with Instagram and TikTok and even X, these algorithms, you know, are the first step. And then you can imagine AI is going to be the most amazing.
I don't know, man. I was just outside. It's a sunny spring day in New York City, and there's a lot of people hanging out, enjoying themselves. And I think that you can overgeneralize our complete kind of servitude to the screen.
Yeah. Although I like to play a game when I walk in New York and count the number of people who are looking at their phones that I see, and just do it sometime and see what percentage. Be like yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, and it's usually over half.
Well, that's true, Alex. I used to have this same. I felt like I had to bring this observation to the elderly management at Hearst that particular day on my commute to the tower, there wasn't a single person on the subway reading a magazine. I mean, that obviously doesn't shock you, right? But like, it was news to certain people. Listen, there's a bunch of things, Alex, and I know you'll be sympathetic to this because you, I think, share with me some executive functioning problems. I want AI to do my taxes really well and to save me money. I want AI to drive me around for sure. I love it being driven. I drove with you, Alex, in an AI car.
Yeah.
I want AI to fold the laundry, clean the house, get groceries. I want to do all that shit. I want it to organize my desktop on my computer.
Oh, yeah. Efficiency. That stuff has nothing to do with human connection or taste.
I've been reading a lot of legal documents this week. I want it to help me with that.
You know
stuff.
What? I think I'm often the optimist about technology, and I am optimistic. I'm very excited about the state of technology right now. Just like caveat what I'm about to say. I agree with you. I'm excited about all of these things. And all of these things are great, I think, if you can pay a subscription and, you know, pay enough, you know, to cover the compute and stuff like that and have a pretty raw, you know, unfiltered access to to the LLMs, to the AI, to the intelligence that we are tapping into. If you're poor and that thing needs to be subsidized by advertising and commerce, then you'll have a very different experience, Troy. Then your reality of how you're doing your taxes or picking up a pair of pants and stuff like that will be filtered through gigantic commerce engines that will constantly try to extract some value out of you because you're not paying a subscription. And I feel that there's two realities here. One, which is, we just to simplify it, one, which is you pay for a subscription model, you get the utopian version of AI where it helps you, where it talks to you, where you're making your tortillas, where it helps you through ship. The other one is the dystopian version of AI, where it is constantly, it's an intelligence that is so smart, knows anything about you, and is constantly trying to extract value from you. Constantly trying to extract value from it. It's what algorithms do today.
Yeah.
Right? And you can't say that the social media, I think, I mean, in some days, I think it's all made us crazy a little bit. There's some stuff that we think is normal that 5 years ago we would have thought is completely insane behavior because we've been so conditioned by feeds which are just meant to extract value from us. That's all they do.
But is there data about, I think what Troy's point is, like there's an extremely online population, and I think we tend to think it's larger maybe than it is. I mean, I find that sometimes it's refreshing a little bit to be in Miami for that reason, is that people have none of the concerns that like everyone always talks about. Nobody talks about politics. Like nobody, everyone's like, oh, how do you live with DeSantis? It's like, nobody talks about it. I don't think people
care. We just vote for him. We don't talk about it.
But nobody most people are apathetic the way it used to be. And I'm sure in New York and San Francisco, fine. Everyone's like,
yeah, most people don't give a shit. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Listen, you guys, I mean, I think the biggest challenge of our time is coming. And if we build these sort of general cognitive systems, like everything changes, right? And so I guess I agree with you. It's going to be fundamental, like how the economy works, what's valued, do we need universal basic income? You know, how do we find like all the other things, like the cognitive labor that we did, like how do we find meaning in work and the pursuit of something that's kind of defined much of our adult lives? You know, like this is a massive social economic transformation that will touch all aspects of how we organize ourselves. And I just have more faith in us that we're, you know, going to get fed by Temu because of, you know, pernicious algorithms.
Well, we adapt. I mean, the human
we definitely adapt, but it's gonna be messy because the way that we adapt is through just sort of, you know, different people picking sides and kind of arguing it out, and it's gonna be nasty. And there may be flashpoints that are very, you know, regrettable. But
yeah,
we're on our way to a very new system.
It'll be interesting. I hope so.
At the very least, it'll be interesting. There was a great podcast Ezra Klein had with the Anthropic CEO, Dario Amodei. He came across to me as very thoughtful in a way that I don't sometimes get that feeling from some of the people when they're talking about this. Well, who knows? It'll be good. We think it'll be great. You know, they always do a hand waving though with the drug discovery. And I'm like, yes, great. Do the drug discovery. But why did you start then with where you did? Like, why didn't you just make this around drug discovery?
He was great. But, you know, one of the points he made repeatedly was what I would call this sort of techno-determinist kind of point of view, right? Which is, we got no choice. The Russians are going to have it. The Chinese are going to have it. Fuck, the North Koreans are going to have it. So we're all going that way. And the best way to defend ourselves is to understand it better than them by building it first. And
yeah, it's a nuclear
bomb. That's kind of true.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's kind of like, oh, we discovered the round wheel. How do we ever go back to the square wheel? We can't. You know, I mean, there's something about progress and technology and humans that means that we just are kind of like enslaved to this kind of pursuit of progress. And I think he's right. I think the point gets made. But and listen, it's easy to stand back and say, no, wait, can't we be more thoughtful about it? Can't we put it in the hands of government versus put it in the hands of, we don't even know what it is. We don't even know what, I would like to put it in the hands of the technocrats in Washington versus the technocrats in Silicon Valley doesn't make me feel much better, right? But like, I don't know. I think it's
what we're about to go through is really staggering. And one of the things that brings it home to me, Brian, is the changing nature of warfare.
Oh, yeah.
What good is it now to have an aircraft carrier? Do we need an aircraft carrier? Let's just build a billion drones and send them over.
I take back anything I said about the video gamers being incels, because we need them on the front lines.
We need those guys.
These drones. These are our valuable national asset.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we even need them. I think everything is just going to be automated.
So we don't even need them.
Yeah.
That was a question I thought at the end that was interesting in that conversation when Ezra Klein asked what he would advise his children to go into and what skills they should even acquire. You know, it was just a couple of years ago, we liberal arts majors were being told, browbeaten, to learn to code. Okay. Learn to code, learn to code, learn to code. And now, wouldn't you know it, it seems like that might be the first thing that skill gets completely and utterly commoditized and taken away. The answer he came up with was kind of pat. It was about adaptability. Because I think that's the techno-determinist thing. It's like we're in the barrel, we're going over the Niagara Falls. So,
but I think there's no era where you shouldn't have taught kids that. Right, because when I was growing up, and all I wanted to do was work on computers, people at school was telling me, "Well, I should learn to become an accountant." Right, and I
really went out to, where'd you go to school?
I mean, you know, I was in France. There's like, get a real job, like accounting or.
Hey, Alex, I see your kid behind you. Is he aware of AI? Does he know what it is?
Yeah, it's just.
Can you have him come over to the mic if you asked him what AI is? What would he
talk
say?
Talk to the Hey, buddy, can you pause it, please? Press pause. Spacebar.
It's Alex telling the child to pause the babysitter.
Spacebar.
Oh, no, you don't pause this. It's a game. Sorry. Come here. Do you see these two men? They kind of look like Santas. They want to know, do you know what AI is?
Of course I do.
What is it?
I don't know.
What is AI?
All I know is a computer that you ask questions to and it tries to answer.
That's a good answer.
That's all I can.
That is really good. Is it smart?
It's a good definition, I gotta say.
Do you think it's smart?
It's probably as smart as a person because someone had to make it.
Mm. All right. Well, that makes sense. Thank you so much. Thank you for calling in.
That's our first call.
That was great.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, smart as a person because a person had to make it.
Well, you know, the first time I showed him that he was only five then. I think it was generally like kind of a moment for him. Like I could see his something clicking, and it was so nice to see that he just wanted to ask it questions. Like he kind of understood the power of it immediately. And he knows he can just ask me to Google something usually, but there was something different there. I think it's going to be crazy to watch him grow up in a world where this stuff is just everywhere.
One thing I want to write something smart about, but I don't have anything to say that's meaningful yet, is what happens to the nature of truth in this whole thing. There was a story in the Wall Street Journal this week, Brian, about the dude who had some guy on Fiverr create a propaganda machine.
Cost $105.
Yeah. And then I looked at the video of it, and it was, I don't know, was it in Iowa or something? Basically, they set up a little instance of a website on WordPress or something, and then had all the articles generated through the ChatGPT API and gave it a right word, like a right slant. And it just kind of went out and made tons of content. And it looked like a local news site. Now, you or I would not go to that and read it and spend any time with it, right? Like, I don't think it would justify that. Or I think obviously alarm bells would go off.
Well, it pops up in feeds. I mean, these already exist. They're done by either Macedonian teenagers or the Russian, intelligence service.
Right. So you find them in a different context. You get them in your feed. You click on it. You arrive at the site quickly. It looks legitimate. You think it's legitimate.
Yeah.
Is that the mechanic?
I mean, that is the mechanic. I mean, that was the RIP BuzzFeed News story about the Macedonian teenagers creating. At the time, it was because it was an ad tech story, really, because they were just being motivated by plugging in programmatic advertising, getting revenue from, using the Facebook algorithms to get traffic to incendiary content that said the Pope endorsed Donald Trump.
But to me, it sits along a continuum. that started in my mind. Now, it may not have started here, but with Trump. And it was that there's something fungible about digital culture and about the content that we create, that we kind of live and breathe on in our feeds, where the idea that a politician would spew observable lies at that time, remember, I don't know what this would have been like, 2014, just seemed crazy to me. And I think to most people in media that were documenting all of the things that Trump said that were in fact not true. And now we just call him a liar. But at the same time, he's
and it become, doesn't affect him.
He's become a cult.
I mean,
leader,
Joe Biden
right?
ran for president and had to drop out because of he like plagiarized Neil Kinnock's like speech.
I mean, there's also psychology there that when people are so polarized, you know, the truth doesn't really matter at that stage. Like, because they think that the lie, as long as the lie is there to help their side win, it's fine. So I don't know if it's that people are just being swindled more. Or rather that...
But this is the... So I love like this Jeff Bezos thing that he says, humans are not truth seekers by nature. We're social animals. And that's for protective purposes.
Right.
Like we need to be on a team. We need to be on a tribe because there's a lot of threats out there. And so we end up coalescing around that and creating out-groups. And it's sort of human nature. And I think a lot of these technology systems are tapping into human nature, but because of what they do and the way they're able to accelerate and speed it up and metabolize it so quickly and then reconstitute and spit it out, that is where the sort of danger. So none of it is truly new, but the scale.
But I
is
think
new.
I don't know if there was research, but anecdotally, I think if you talk to Gen Z, they're much less susceptible to believing in things being true. Not only online, but in general, just a little bit more suspicious of things. I think we grew up in an era where you couldn't believe all the text you were reading was true. And that was something new for a lot of people, right? To have a site that looks official, where you something looks true. And then quickly, you know, with AI and with other tools, well, what you hear wasn't immediately true. Then photos, then videos. I mean, I think the entirety of the way we can kind of create content is being proven as being falsifiable. Therefore, it either turns us into people who believe what they want to believe or do people that are suspicious. I'm a little bit more optimistic there because I think that generations that grow up in that build that resilience to fake shit.
You know what strikes me, Alex, is that there's this kind of parallel reality that's part of modern technology and AI where I can load a bunch of information into the AI and have it immediately sort through it, categorize it, summarize it, find the truth, find the patterns, find the things that ultimately are real and true. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, we can use the same technology to create a world that's completely unreal and virtualized, which is, it's a fictional narrative, right? And to me, every time a complex system gets built around lies, it eventually collapses. Like it can't sustain. And so my hope is that like, and I just can't reconcile these two realities where we have so much information, the ability to parse through it and get at what's true, what's real, like all of that. But at the same time, the fact that we create our worlds, these disposable digital worlds, every minute of every day means that truth is just like...
Yeah. It's kind of crazy to think about like growing up analog and to think about having access to all the information basically in the world. And just that would have been mind blowing. But then to think the end result is going to be people are going to be less informed, more confused, and less sure of like what is true and what is not true than when. And I guess you could say that sort of ignorance was bliss in that analog age, but I would have assumed that more information means a better coalescing around what is real and what's not real, but I guess the opposite happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I have a hard stop on that note.
All right.
I got to get back to reality.
Are we going to skip good product?
No, we never skip good product.
Okay.
Troy.
We never do. Well, you know, I was struggling this week a little bit. I thought maybe we'd just cut it short it's such a glorious day in New York City and the spring is really wonderful. People are out and they're excited.
Oh God, is spring the good product?
Yeah.
No, well, That's not what it was going to be.
I have allergies.
Do you guys ever listen? Do you ever listen to a song on repeat? Like you find a song you love and you listen to it.
Oh, I listen. I listen to songs like I go into phases. Yeah.
No, but will you listen to it like a song over and over again?
No.
You ever done that, Alex?
Yeah, I do it all the time.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Like how many times in a row?
4.
That's not that many.
I listened to a song today 4 times, but I'm not going to use that either. You know, I got to say, I'm obviously invested in the outcome of, you know, Yahoo's change process. It's interesting to watch and wonder if Yahoo's just going to be the one big last website on the planet. And, you know, it is among the biggest websites other than like the utilities and the social platforms. But I noticed this week that the team at Yahoo Finance relaunched Finance. I don't know if you've seen it, Alex, but it's like a good product. And I wish that they had the news scale and might of, say, a Bloomberg, right? That could keep, you know, because they have Yahoo Finance, which is a kind of little mighty news team, but it's largely fed by syndicated content.
Well, it's a stock ticker, isn't it? The Yahoo thing is like people come for the utility and then you build, you know, some,
yeah, you
know, some content around. I mean, Yahoo Finance is one of their top verticals. They have quote unquote real content there, but
sports is making progress as well. But Yahoo Finance, as of yesterday, is a newly launched product. And on desktop, it's kind of amazing. Not kind of amazing, it's just good.
The strength of it is not the product. The strength of it is the lock-in. Once you have your portfolio in there, you're less likely to change, right?
True. Although, you know, Google has much of the same functionality built into the SERP, and Yahoo's managed to, I guess to your point, because people have, you know, invested time in their own data into it. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see that Yahoo has survived and on account of scale and on account of having their own DSP and their ability to manage the ad stack has kind of like will become the last big website. And then what they do from there will be, you know, TBD. But I don't know.
They still got all that AOL dial-up money coming in to grease the machinery. You think Jim can come on? Jim Lanzone, the CEO? That'd be a great guest.
I mean, it'd be great to have him.
Would he bring like 4 PR people?
I think so.
Yeah. Sucks. Tell him to do it. He should do the rebooting show instead. I allow that. Sometimes.
Well,
that's why we're the flagship. Yeah. Yahoo also bought Artifact, right? Did you mention that?
They did. I talked to Matt about that. Yeah.
The guts of it. What are they? They're just going to do it for the recommendation algorithm?
Yeah, I think they have a good head start on figuring how to connect different pieces of content together. And
yeah,
that's useful.
It's exciting. I wish they went back to, and I've talked to them about that, I wish they went back to their old logo.
The exclamation point?
Well, they still have the exclamation point. I just mean like the old serif.
Lowercase? Yahoo
logo. Yeah, it was all uppercase, actually.
They were lowercase at some point, I thought.
Well, Mercer Mayer changed it, right? But there was this kind of the one that looked like a Nickelodeon cartoon. Troy can add it to the newsletter.
Mercer Mayer can. She brought the purple back. She was all into the purple.
Oh yeah, good product. Other good product is you should all try out Limitless, which captures your meetings and audio notes, and they're releasing that AI pendant where you can just record notes into it. For people like me who have a terrible memory, it's very exciting.
Oh, my good product in that is Shortwave. This AI email app, it's made a giant difference for me.
I started using it, but I don't think I use it well like you do. So I might ask you how you use it. How do you use it?
I have batches for like sales emails. I have batches for newsletters. I have, you know, batches for different things and then just pin stuff that I have to get to. And because I get lost in email, I'm a terrible.
How does it create batches? Isn't it like just like rules in Gmail where it like same people, or is it smarter than that?
It's smarter. I mean, the AI agent is okay, but I mean, I use it. Like I say, how much was this contract for? You know, and it'll go and find it. It's not 100%.
I know we're at the bottom of the episode, but I have one little update.
Correction.
Okay, I'll admit it.
Okay.
I'll allow it.
All right, Brian, someone named Mike Smith volunteered to pay for an annual rebooting subscription for me.
Oh, that's that. You know, he's a gentleman and he's always been a gentleman.
Yeah. So he's going to pay for it. And he went on and he tried to pay for it.
The $1,000 one?
I don't know. We'll have to see. And I think it depends whether it's tax deductible or not. But he said, I couldn't do it because you already have a membership.
And I canceled your membership.
You did? Can you cancel it, please?
Oh, good. I already did. I think it'll expire in like a few days because you said it wasn't worth it. So I canceled it.
Okay.
$20. It's not worth it. Forget it.
Well, anyway, just so you know, I've got a new annual one coming in from Mike Smith.
Good. Yahoo Marketing Group. I saw a subscription come in from them. I don't understand this. Get a group subscription. I'm going to have to go to them. If you're listening, Yahoo, get a group subscription. Don't put marketing at yahooinc.com. Come on. Don't we know this? Just make up a name. Thank you all for listening. And if you like this podcast, I hope you do. Please leave us a rating and review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast that takes ratings and reviews. And if you have feedback, do send me a note. My email is bmorrissey@therebooting.com.
Brian, someone just texted me about you.
Fuck. No.
This is worth me being late for my meeting.
She's a friend, and she said, I don't understand Brian's subscription offer. He seems to block the end of post and says for subscriber content, go here. Then when I get to the subscription page, the two offerings seem to be for events and business insights only. I don't want those. He needs to tweak his language because I was ready to subscribe.
I have full access
but
to
just
all
for
content.
More content, not can.
Jesus Christ.
Brian, this is free user feedback. It's a gift.
I know.
Take it as a gift.
I'm taking it.
All right. Okay, we can
I'm going to go crack the whip with my product guy.
Yeah, I can help you out.
Thanks, guys.